Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
So Manchester United held to a 1-1 draw by AC Milan in the Europa League. Rangers 1-1 away at Slavia Prague. Arsenal just underway against Olympiacos. And Spurs taking on Dinamo Zagreb. Okay, it's time to talk to Peter Crouch. He is the star of this brand new ad.
It's the Cheltenham Festival, the biggest week in jump racing, and what a day of action we have in store for you today. And you can really
And here's the Cheltenham favourite, number four, definitely punching. And you can see why, Gina.
He hasn't got the most attractive head. He's a leggy sort with a robotic stride, but he has an impressive turn of foot for his size.
He must be 20 hands at least.
He's moved tables a lot, but he's in form at home.
Just loves the big occasion. Jumps for fun.
Feature at stud, Gina.
Not sure, Matt. Unlikely to be wanted for breeding. It's nearly time. Worthy favourite, Matt?
Definitely the favourite, Gina. He's prepared. He'll stay all day.
Even the Irish will back this English banker.
This Cheltenham, don't feel like a punter, feel like a favourite. With great offers on the Paddy Power app. Paddy Power, feel like a favourite.
Yeah, I'm sure you've seen it. Don't feel like a punter, feel like a favourite. This Cheltenham with Paddy Power. They didn't even give you a line, Peter.
No. I think my acting skills left a lot to be desired in the first ad we did. So, didn't warrant a line this time.
Your dad worked in advertising, I gather. So did you take the creative lead on this?
No, it certainly wasn't my creative. I wouldn't have described myself as, not ready for breeding. No. I was. Whenever I work, they're always good ads. They're always good ideas. So I enjoyed being involved in this one. But yeah, my dad was well involved in advertising. I went on a few shoots with him at an early age. I probably would have got into that if I didn't play to football.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I loved it. I went on a few shoots with him. We did a few campaigns, and yeah, it was good. Good fun.
It turns out post-football life is going all right for you. You're never off our TV screens. Mm. You're back with another series of this wildly successful podcast. You're doing punditry with BT Sports. Mm. You had a prime-time Saturday night TV show on the BBC. Is part of you thinking, maybe that last year in Burnley, maybe I should have retired a year earlier?
No, I enjoyed that. I had a 20-odd year career, so I loved it. I was so scared of sort of not being able to do anything, that I probably took on a little bit too much at the start when I retired, and things are going great, so I've managed to scale back a bit now and just do the things that I really, really enjoy. I always enjoy working with Paddy Power doing these kind of ads and stuff, but the football stuff, I'm staying involved, and the podcast I absolutely love. So yeah, there's just a handful of things that I really, really enjoy doing, so I feel quite lucky, yeah.
Yeah, it is a bit mad how well it's gone that a year after retiring, you're sitting there at 9 o'clock on a Saturday night on the BBC interviewing Liam Gallagher.
Honestly, some of the things that have happened have just been crazy. Like even with the podcast, we had the Crouch Fest, and when Liam Gallagher was there, like Catherine Jenkins was singing, it was a bizarre occasion. And like you say, the Saturday night show was great fun. We had some brilliant guests. It was supposed to have the Euros backdrop, but obviously that got cancelled, and we ended up doing it. But it was great fun and something that I enjoy. But with the podcast as well, it's just great. But certainly with the football stuff that I do, I'm involved in the Champions League, all the big matches. It's just a shame we haven't been able to go to them.
Yeah, it really is. Have you had time to miss football then?
I'll always miss it. There'll always be that nagging thing. And there's a few things sort of like, the back of my mind that you know, when I see people like, you know, Scott Parker, Steven Gerrard, players I played with now, Frank Lampard, who have gone into management, and I think, you know, when they win a match or they achieve something, I think, you know, I'm never gonna have that again, you know. But I can't complain, because what I'm doing, I'm absolutely loving. I'm lucky to be involved in loads of fun stuff and continue to, you know, enjoy it. But there is that nagging sort of suspicion that, you know, I'm not going to win as a team again, and that day-to-day stuff, you know, going into training and just having a laugh and doing something that you love every day. Of course I'll miss it, but, you know, this is the next best thing.
Yeah, it did really seem in those latter years at Stoke and at Burnley that you properly enjoyed that dressing room atmosphere, that you were almost able, a bit mature, to take that step back and appreciate it for what it was.
Yeah, definitely. I think certainly early on in my career, I was so sort of concentrating on, you know, trying to make it, trying to get in the next team that I needed to be in, or the next, you know, England squad, you know, playing for Liverpool, you know, it's just so intense. You never get a minute to sort of sit back and think about what you've achieved or what you're doing at the time. But yeah, like you say, I mean, certainly at 37, 38, when I was at Stoke and I was at Burnley, you know, a lot of the time we played one game a week, and, you know, by the time I was 38, I was barely playing, really. So I could sort of take stock and just enjoy it a bit more, which is what I did, yeah. And, I wouldn't change my career for anything. I know I had probably too many clubs. I had loads of clubs, but I would have liked to have stayed at one club all my life, but I wouldn't change it for the world, because I just experienced so many different things.
You mightn't have been played as much, but you were still competitive. I was doing a bit of research, so I was talking to one of your former teammates yesterday, who said you are still the tech ball champion with this person from your time at Burnley. And he also said to ask him about the Hummer golf buggy I saw him driving in Portugal.
Oh, who's that then?
Well, there's an Irish connection there. You might have John played Morris up front together a few times.
Yeah, fair play. The Hummer golf buggy, it wasn't mine, it was a friend of mine's, and I rented his place, and he had that was his buggy to get about. So yeah, it was interesting. I was trying to keep my head down at times, but
flash.
It was a little bit, yeah. Not sure what Roy Keane would have made of it, but it was
you pulled up alongside him again.
Not sure how pleased he'd have been, but it was great to get about. But tech ball, oh my god, yeah, I absolutely love it. I've got a table myself at home for the summer, so that'll be out in the summer. Absolutely love it.
Let's talk about what's going on at the moment then, because you are going to games. What the hell is going on with Liverpool?
Oh, it's so difficult to put your finger on them. I just think there's so many little factors that have added up to be a big problem, and you can't get away from the fact that it is a big problem at the moment. You know, the teams that they've lost at home to, or drawn at home especially, I think they've, they haven't won in seven. It's the worst record ever for a Liverpool side. So you can't say it's a blip anymore. It's actually a real big problem. But yeah, I mean, it starts with the injuries, to Van Dijk, to Gomez, to Fabinho, to Henderson. You know, anyone who seems to come in and replace the in the centre-half role gets injured. And then you're ripping the midfield out, ripping the midfield of Fabinho and Henderson out to cope with that, you know, problem at centre half, and then the fullbacks can't get forward as much. In tandem is a lack of form with the strikers. You know, Firmino, Mane, even Salah at times, even though he's scored so many goals. But those two with Mane, certainly Firmino, have suffered a lack of form. Lots of little factors that have caused a big problem.
Like, it does feel as though it is that mix of everything, the energy, the attitude, the confidence levels, the organisation, even the noise, listening to them, it doesn't seem as loud on the pitch with the players. Mm. But to lose it that quickly, because you go back to Christmas, they're top of the Premier League, they're 3.5 years unbeaten at home, they've just put 7 past Crystal Palace, even for the likes of Salah as a forward. Can it go that quickly in the space of 2 months that everything that's in the well for 3 years of unbelievable success, like, it's as if that never happened now when you watch them?
It's really, really strange, isn't it? And your answer to the question is yeah. I mean, you know, it only takes one game. If you have a bad game, you know, you're thinking about that, or you only takes one game to miss a chance to, you know, even if you've gone on a run of 6 or 7 goals in 6 or 7 games, as soon as you have that one miss, you start thinking about it, you know, that can lead to more lack of confidence, and that's what's happened. And it's I mean, listen, I'm like you. I can't. It's really hard to put your finger on. I made bets when they lost the first couple of games at home with Man United fans, friends of mine, made some big bets. Ones that I'm really not looking forward to paying, really. Not financial, but quite yeah. embarrassing for me at times, you know. So, yeah, I'm not looking forward to that because, you know, it's looking like Man United are going to finish above Liverpool, but I never thought I'd say that the season after winning it.
Yeah. What can you do as a player in that scenario? Because the obvious example for yourself is going to Liverpool, where I presume when you went, having had such a good season at Southampton, the buzz you were on at arriving at a club like Liverpool, you're probably peak confidence, and then nothing happens for 3 or 4 months and there's a goal drought and pressure's rising. Maybe it's different because there's fans in the stadium back then. What's that like to live through that sort of declining confidence over a space of time?
That, you know, football-wise, that was the most difficult period of my career, without a doubt. You know, I've gone to a huge club just off the back of Istanbul, 2005. You know, I've just been signed and, you know, they've got a striker that can't score. It was really, really difficult. But I felt I went there and I was sort of doing everything Rafa said. And I was playing a sort of different role. And he was happy with me and he kept saying that to me. And it was amazing when I did start scoring. You know, the reason I started scoring because I just went back to what I was doing at Southampton, and everyone was really pleased. Everyone apart from Rafa, really, because I was doing my own thing more than, you know, doing his thing. But I felt that I had to become more selfish, and I was more selfish. And thankfully, you know, I got over that. But it was some really difficult times, I have to say.
What are your teammates like during that spell? Because you said they're coming back, they're European champions, they're expecting to kick on, and you're the new big money signing up front. Like, are they openly supportive? Or are you looking around the dressing room feeling, geez, am I letting these guys down?
No, it wasn't like that for one second. I didn't feel that for one second at all. It's a weird thing because I think being at a club like Liverpool, I was in exactly the right place. It became sort of me, the players, you know, the staff, the fans against everyone else who was trying to ridicule me. And that's just the mentality that I think you get at Liverpool, you know, as a city, really. If someone's having a go at sort of one of their own, it's like, you know, everyone sort of battens down hatches and, is, you know, defends that person. And I think everyone could see in the stadium that I was doing really well, I was working hard, you know, and I was hopefully a good lad. And then, you know, it always seemed, you know, just never felt for one second that the fans ever got on my back. And when I did score, I think you can see the game at Wigan. It's like the camera was shaking, you know, the whole team was with me celebrating when I scored. And then and the fans were going crazy. And it was, you know, there's not many clubs, especially top clubs, that would have stuck with someone like they did with me.
Yeah. And were you able to, at the time, think like that actually these people here in the dressing room have my back, those supporters have my back, and that sort of, like you use the word ridicule, that outside tabloid ridicule that was there, I can ignore that, or is it just impossible to ignore it?
Listen, I tried my best to ignore it. It was hard. I remember they had on one of the pullouts in one of the newspapers, because I hadn't scored in 24 hours, they did me as Jack Bauer. And the 24, I always remember it. And I think it might have been the day that I scored that I was front page of the pullout as Jack Bauer in 24 hours. And every time I turned on the TV, Sky Sports News, they were showing, you know, Nispies. It was horrendous. I mean, it was everywhere I looked. My mum and dad stopped buying newspapers. It was huge news because it was Liverpool, and I was playing for England as well. So, it was a difficult time. But I had good people around me that sort of got me out of it. And then after that, it was, thank God, the floodgates opened and I started scoring.
Yeah, and good forwards around you as well, because that was the season Robbie Fowler made his return to the club. Fernando Morientes was there at the time. Mm. Obviously, you had Gerrard and Alonso just behind you. Over the next couple of years, Cout comes in. Fernando Torres comes in. Were you a sponge for those kind of players as to what you could learn from them?
Listen, being at Liverpool, you know, you've always got like competition for places. There's so much, you know, ability in the dress room. And every single day in training was intense. It was like, you know, the pressure was on. It was playing at a club like that. It was just, you know, a privilege to sort of be and see it happen.
What was Fowler like in training?
Yeah, brilliant. Just a great finisher. I mean, listen, he wasn't the Robbie Fowler that burst on the scene at sort of 18. He was, you know, he'd been around and, you know, he'd come back. He wasn't the same player. He'd lost the yard, to be fair. But in training, like finishing sessions, anything like that, he's still world class. He's one of those players, you give him a chance. It's in the back of the net. But, yeah, and then Torres, Dirk Kuyt had different sort of abilities. Morientes, like you say, you know, was class in some ways, yeah. And every day was learning.
I heard you picking your all-time five-a-side team at one stage and you put Gerrard and Alonso in midfield. And I thought, well, fair enough, who else could it be? And then I'm thinking, well, you play with Luka Modric. Was it just that Luka Modric at that Spurs stage wasn't maybe the player he was 4 or 5 years ago at Real Madrid?
I can't remember that team because I've picked a few five-a-side teams and Modric has always been in it.
So who are you leaving out, Gerrard or Alonso?
I'm leaving Alonso out, not because, you know, I've said that quickly, but Modric was unbelievable. And Gerrard was the best player I played with, but Modric was a joke, and I think they'd compliment each other really well. But
In what way was Modric a joke?
Oh, just like, you know, I just didn't see him lose the ball. And it's one of those, you know, in an era where we all talk about stats and assists and goals, you know, he's not going to be top of all those lists, you know, like tackles or work rate. But with a footballing eye, to watch someone like Luka Modric, he was a genius. Just... I watched him wriggle out of positions in training. I can't remember him ever give the ball away. He dictated the tempo of football matches. He dictated games. He always had an eye for a pass. He could score a goal. He was a beautiful player to watch.
On Spurs then, turns out they brought this guy in last summer, Gareth Bale, who can still play a bit of football.
Yeah, of course he can. You know, he was struggling a bit with fitness. I interviewed him actually when he first came over, and he was so excited to get going at Spurs. But yeah, it just didn't work out for a long time. Just didn't work out for a long time.
The outside opinion again would be that excitement you speak of wasn't there. That he was coming to the end. He's coming to the end of his career. He loves his golf, and well, actually, this is return back to Britain and feed up.
Mm. Yeah, well, you know, in all honesty, the exact opposite. You know, that's what I saw when he first arrived back, because, you know, if you wanted to play golf, listen, the golf course is in Madrid and the weather is far better than coming down to London, I can tell you that. You know, having spoke to him, he absolutely loved Madrid, like as a place. He was struggling not playing, but he loved it as a place, and the golf courses were very nice. But, you know, coming to Tottenham, he had unfinished business football-wise, and I think, you know, fitness-wise, I think because he's such a laid-back character, some people see that as he doesn't care. Well, it's not the case, you know, but, you know, he's never going to scream and shout. He's never going to bang door down if he's not playing, because he's just a happy-go-lucky sort of laid-back character. But once he gets on a football pitch and he's fit, he's a top, top player.
On Bale then, you mentioned Gerrard is the best player you ever played against. If you were to put the Gerrard FA Cup Final 06 up against Bale, Inter Milan, taxi from Icon.
Ooh. Oh.
Which one's coming out on top?
Oh, my God. God, that's difficult, because I think as an individual performance, like for the entire game, I'd say Gareth Bale. But for sheer, you know, whatever that was that Stevie did, you know, I look at my middle every day and I think about Stevie. You know, he had cramp. He picked himself up and hit two absolute worldies to win the game for us. So I mean, they're different. I think Stevie had two unbelievable moments of genius, and Gareth Bale's performance overall was just, never seen anything like it.
So you're not that footballer when he asks, what do you do with your medals? They say, I don't know, I'll give them to the parents. Haven't seen them in years. You actually have it front and centre.
Oh, no, I've got mine, yeah. It is upstairs. It's not got pride of place in the office or anything. It's upstairs in a box. But, yeah, I do look at it every now and then and think of Stephen Gerrard.
Peter, thanks a million for joining us on Off the Ball.
Pleasure.
Peter Crouch is a brand ambassador for Paddy Power, and he stars along with his wife Abby in their new Feel Like a Favourite racing campaign for Cheltenham.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. GamblingCare.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network.